This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Up next, Richard Conte is joined by Dr. Athena Pappas, Director of the Cardiovascular Institute, Rhode Island, in Providence. They cover managing pregnancy in patients with valvular heart disease.
Athena, welcome to AXL.
Thank you very much.
Let's start off by just giving us sort of an overview of what is the problem here.
So the problem is quite broad. We've seen that more women, as they are living longer with congenital heart disease or in developing countries, have acquired heart disease, such as rheumatic disease, and women are having babies later in life, that we're seeing more and more women that have heart disease during pregnancy.
Most of the acquired heart disease is valvular. It's aortic or mitral or even tricuspid. And the congenital stuff is probably relegated to pulmonic stenosis and things of that nature. Would you agree with that?
Correct. Most of the aortic stenosis in that age group is going to be the bicuspid valves.
Mm-hmm. And in association with possible coarctation of the aorta and things of that nature.
Absolutely, and important in pregnancy to keep in mind.
You bet. So what do we do about all this? How do we handle this?
The good news is we've got a fair amount of data from both registries, the Toronto group, the group in Europe, continued awareness of this. So we have some pretty robust data to, one, risk stratify patients. We also have guidelines from the European Society of Cardiology and ACC valvular guidelines address this. The first thing to remember is ideally you'd like to assess and know what the lesion is and its severity and the patient's functional class preconception.
Okay. Then what?
Now, you don't always get that opportunity,
right.
But once you've assessed that, you'd like to sort the patients into high risk and low risk and then know how to best treat them. Ideally, if you've seen them pre-pregnancy, you would optimize or even treat or perform surgery so that they can safely get through any pregnancy if they're symptomatic.
How often do you think you've seen a person, a lady, prior to her pregnancy? Most of the time, it's after they get pregnant, right?
Since that's my area of expertise in Rhode Island, I see almost all of the pregnant patients with heart disease. So it depends on the population and their access to care. So
right.
Those that have access to care, we see them quite frequently prior. But it's the patients that may be immigrants or do not have health care that you might see late in the pregnancy. But importantly, once we see them and we've assessed them, we have these robust database that you can look at some high-risk features. Do they have what the NYHA class is, what their LV functional class is, and then the severity of either stenosis or regurgitation. And those are the three key components to assess.
Let's concentrate on mitral stenosis, let's say. And usually it's not a congenital heart disease in most instances. Mostly it's rheumatic. What do you do for these ladies?
So very important and a little bit different disease in developing countries compared to economically developed countries. That being said, mitral stenosis patients often get into trouble in the moderate to severe range. ROPAC just published their data in CIRC last month, looking at that internationally. The patients with the increase in heart rate and increase in volume, almost all patients will worsen by a functional class. And if they end up in heart failure, they could get into trouble. You can do valvuloplasty if you need to, and you can add a beta blocker to reduce that. Ideally, if they have moderate to severe, and that would be defined in the 1.5 range now, below 1.5 by new guidelines, they should have a balloon valvuloplasty prior.
Now, let's concentrate on the balloon valvuloplasty, because during that valvuloplasty, the baby is getting a lot of radiation. How do you account for that?
two things. Organogenesis, once organogenesis is complete after 12 weeks gestation, it's much safer, and that's often when your heart rate and volume goes up.
Sure.
So it's usually later in pregnancy. And with shielding, you can reduce that significantly below the 50 milligray, which increases the risk. So that's important. You can do a lot of it, if not all of it, under ultrasound guidance, so TEE guidance.
What level increases the risk? You said 50 milligray. Above 50 milligray.
Mm-hmm. There's some pretty good data for that.
What if the patient's in atrial fibrillation? Then what?
Excellent question, because in pregnancy, there's increased risk of thrombogenesis. Mm-hmm. In general, fivefold increased risk of thromboembolic complications. They need to be anticoagulated, and they usually have to be gotten out of atrial fibrillation. Most mitral stenosis patients, as you know, will deteriorate in atrial fibrillation, and the same is true here. So probably one of the take-home messages, treat the mother, because if you don't treat the mother, you won't have a baby. So treat the mother aggressively.
Do many of these women spontaneously revert to sinus rhythm, or they usually stay in atrial fibrillation?
The rheumatic patients often is very similar to rheumatic patients that aren't pregnant. So
right.
They have abnormal atria. The other piece which is important is, as you know, in rheumatic patients, they may have abnormal ventricles, and they can get into trouble because of that as well.
Okay, now let's talk about anticoagulation, because that's the crux of this whole issue. If you're in atrial fibrillation, you're pregnant, you've got rheumatic heart disease, particularly mitral stenosis. What do you recommend for anticoagulation?
So both the European and American guidelines address this, which is helpful for us. It becomes even more important in the patients have mechanical mitral valves or aortic valves,
right.
Mitral in particular. So Coumadin can be used. There's increased risk of teratogenesis in the first trimester if patients are on more than 5 milligrams a day. So you can continue Coumadin throughout pregnancy if they're on a low dose. You need to have a conversation with the patient of switching them to Lovenox during that period or during the peri-delivery period. And you have to follow 10A levels at that for each week because it changes very quickly. That's for atrial fibrillation. The problem with mechanical valves, it's quite clear that the risk of thrombosis is still increased with up to 10% of patients developing thrombosis.
And even though they're anticoagulated.
With the Lovenox. The Coumadin seems to be better, but the risks are still increased. And when they have thrombosis, they often have very adverse outcomes, including stroke and death.
Well, as I recall, the NOACs, the new oral anticoagulants, are not indicated in patients with valvular
correct.
Heart disease.
That's correct.
Why is that?
I wouldn't know the answer to that, but we need to find out.
Well, the way I look at it is you can measure what you're doing with warfarin. You cannot measure anything with the NOACs. So you're either perfectly anticoagulated, in many instances probably, because that's the bell-shaped curve, or you're over-anticoagulated or under-anticoagulated.
For now, we don't have data in pregnancy to know about them, so the choices are really Coumadin, unfractionated heparin, or Lovenox. I think the other group we probably should talk about is the aortic valve disease patients. So that group of patients, if they're asymptomatic, up to the point of being severe, and you know about it, will tolerate pregnancy fairly well. The other important thing about aortic stenosis is you have to be sure you know if they have an aortopathy. Now, their risk of dissection if they have a coarc or aortopathy doesn't appear to be as high as in the Marfan's patients that become pregnant. Marfan's patients have a consistent 10% dissection risk during pregnancy. It's slightly increased, but the actual relative risk is not clear.
What I'm getting at is that we give Coumadin a bad name by saying it's rat poison. Well, any of the NOACs, if you gave enough of it, it would kill a bunch of rats too. Do you agree with that?
Even if the rat's pregnant, probably.
Yeah, right. I'm all for using Coumadin. One of the reasons is I can measure what I'm doing. At least I can get a...
One of the important things is pregnancy is different. So you have a 50% increase in cardiac output. Your GFR is that flow is going through the kidneys. And so you have to adjust medications. That includes digoxin, that's protein binding. That includes increasing frequency of dosing for beta blocker. And it means if you're giving Lovenox, you have to weekly measure the levels to be sure you're therapeutic.
Okay, what's the message for the listener?
Threefold. So ideally, you want to assess the degree of stenosis, the functional state of the patient pre-pregnancy, and optimize them pre-pregnancy. I think the second point is if you have mild or moderate stenosis, mild degrees, are well tolerated. In mitral stenosis, moderate or severe may deteriorate. They often will, but beta blockers help. With aortic stenosis, as long as they're asymptomatic, have a normal LV, do not have pulmonary hypertension, and have NYHA class 1, they should do well during pregnancy.
I think we'll end on that note. We've gone over our time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, editor-in-chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.